Wrestling Informant 24/7. WrestlingInformant.com.
We are live, Wrestling Informant Radio. You're checking us out here on WrestlingInformant247.com, Wednesday, June the 17th, 2015. How's it going, everybody? My name is Gary Cantrell, and over there on the other side, that's Chris McManamy. And Chris, how you doing, pal?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, my friend. Doing the best I can. Ready to get out of town for a little beach action this weekend. But other than that, I'm great.
Very cool.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, we're going to talk to Josh Alexander here in a few moments. But first, WrestlingInformant.com/Amazon. We got to tell you about WrestlingInformant.com/Amazon. Of course, we do, because it's the place where you go, where you make all your Amazon purchases, and you support our show, our website, our radio network at the exact same time. So you go to WrestlingInformant.com/Amazon. It just takes you right to the front page of Amazon, just as if you had typed in Amazon.com, only you would not do that. You would go to WrestlingInformant.com/Amazon, and it just tells them, hey, we sent you. Amazon kicks back a couple pennies our way. And in the end, yeah, it does actually make a difference. I see people using it every day almost, and we do greatly, greatly appreciate the support. So do that. Help us out. And look, we're going to add this Josh Alexander to the show here momentarily here. We're gonna call the phone. It's going to ring. We're going to bring him on. It's just what we do, right?
Yeah, that's how we've always done it.
All right, it's ringing. This is what we do. We bring him right on the air live. That's what we do. He's got to pick up first, of course.
You have reached the voicemail box.
Oh, no. We reached a mailbox, Chris. Oh,
no.
We've got a mailbox.
Uh-oh. That was the number he gave.
That is the number he gave.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'll tell you what. We'll talk for a second. We'll give him a moment to, collect himself. Maybe he's not in front of the phone. Chris, you are the booking agent extraordinaire, my friend. This is the kind of stuff that rests on your plate.
Oh, it does. And that's the thing that we always fear will happen.
Well,
whenever they said, I'll do it. I got nothing going on. We're good to go. Here's a number. Boom.
Yeah. You didn't give him our old number that is out of service anymore, did you?
I didn't give him any number. I told him, I was like, we'll call you. It's the don't call us, we'll call you.
Okay. That old gag.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, look.
I just told him what Erica we were calling from, just so he knew.
Well, I don't even think it does that anymore. Skype, gives you, this weird, random generated number.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yes, it is. I agree. So, hey, man, let's give it another shot, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I don't want to blow up the phone, so to speak.
No.
Give it another go here. And we're ringing.
Hello?
Josh Alexander, how you doing? This is Gary and Chris live on Wrestling Informant Radio.
How are you?
We're doing good, man. The second time is a charm, and you are here live on the air now. Where are we talking to you tonight? You're up in Canada?
Yeah, up in Canada, and just outside Toronto.
Ah, fantastic, fantastic. How's the weather up there?
Oh, it's beautiful today. I don't know what it would be in America, but it's 28 degrees here.
28 degrees?
It's like 100.
Holy crap. I don't know if you've ever been to D.C., Josh, but we have some terrible weather here in Washington.
I've never been there. I've heard wonderful things, though.
Oh, well, I don't know if you're being real or not, but this is my hometown, and the weather here absolutely stinks. The traffic stinks, but sometimes the people are nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got it.
There you go. So we got the Josh Alexander here. Just put out this very long blog on, what was it, Monday, right? Monday morning.
Sunday evening, yeah.
Oh, Sunday. So, excuse me. Jeez, I got my dates mixed up already. It says Monday on here. Maybe we're in a different time zone. I don't know what's going on here, but we're off to a great start. First, we got the weather. Then we got time zones. This is how you start a wrestling radio program. Josh, I've seen on your Twitter, you say you listen to a lot of podcasts. We are not your conventional wrestling podcast. In fact, we are quite the opposite. Sometimes we like to stray from the norm and just kind of go off the rails a little bit in terms of, we talk about the wrestling a little bit and we talk about some other things a little bit. And that's kind of how we roll here. So that's good with you. It's good with us.
Yeah, man. Sounds good.
All right. Fantastic. So I was reading this blog and you are walking away from wrestling. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's nothing that I'm doing by choice. I consulted a few doctors. I got second opinion. They've all pretty much told me the exact same thing. It's that if I continue to wrestle after I have this next fusion surgery, I'll have so much narrowing of my spinal column at a certain point that I will eventually, just through bumping, lose use of my entire left side.
Wow.
It's not worse.
That's pretty intense, man. I mean, you know, being a wrestler, I'm not one to have ever been a wrestler, but I'm a big wrestling fan. And one thing that's consistent when I hear, you know, in interviews and reading books and see on DVDs is that when you're a wrestler, I mean, this is all you know. This is your passion. This is your world. And I'm assuming the same goes for you. So to be able to get this news and hear that, you know what, if you keep going down this road, you know, parts of your body are going to stop working. I mean, that's got to be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it was, I describe it as devastating.
Sure.
But, like writing is something I do. It's a process of getting my feelings out there. And like 20 minutes after I got the news from that final doctor, I sat in my truck and I wrote out that entire blog on the spot in 20 minutes. It was like I wasn't even writing.
Yeah.
The words kept pouring out of me. And by the end of it, I read it over and I was like, oh man, I think I got something here. I waited until I finally announced it to release it. But yeah,
definitely some heartfelt stuff here. We'll talk about this. I would say though, if you like podcasting, one thing I can say, cause Chris and I have been doing this for years now, not necessarily together for years, but this show, you know, it's been around for almost a year or so, but podcasting, that's another great way to get out your emotions and stuff. If you like listening to them, I recommend maybe you even think about starting one. And that's a great way to channel some of your emotions and get some stuff out, man. It really helps. I mean, it's been very therapeutic for me. I mean, I've had my own messed up past and stuff like that, and I can tell you it helps a lot.
Yeah, it's something I've thought about. It's like a very introspective process, right? You're always analyzing yourself compared to other people when you interview them. So it's something I might look into in the future.
Definitely.
For sure.
One thing that I picked out of this that I identified with, and I think, you know, when you write stuff, especially like this, you tend to hear that a lot of people can identify with things. You know, people say, oh man, you know, I can identify with this or I can identify with that. You talked about how you were, you know, obese when you were a child, and I'm a bigger guy. I've always, you know, been a bigger guy. I didn't go the right road like you did and get myself in shape, something I should definitely consider doing at some point, I would think. But, you know, what kind of problems did you deal with as a child? I mean, was it really tough growing up like that for you?
Well, I became a bigger child kind of later in life.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I was always pretty active. I wasn't huge until I hurt my knee playing basketball in high school, and I had knee surgery. And I got so depressed because I couldn't play basketball. It was the only thing I had and that I thought I had in my life, at least. Like, all my friends did it. And, like, I was immobile for a while, and I ballooned right up to almost 300 pounds.
Wow.
And, I had no idea what to do with myself. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do anything like that. I just seem to eat if I get depressed.
Sure. I can identify like that. With that for sure.
Yeah. So that's something like that happened to me in high school. And it's kind of it's a crappy thing because it just builds upon itself. Bigger you get, the more depressed you get, the more depressed you get, the more you eat, the bigger you get. It just goes all the way around. So to stop it, like, it took something like professional wrestling to really turn me around.
when I, the first day I stepped into a wrestling ring, I was always kind of athletic because of basketball and I had a trampoline.
Right.
When I was a kid, and I took my first bump, and from that very first bump that I took, everybody that was around that ring pulled me aside and said, "You're like a natural at this. Oh my God. Like, I've never seen somebody bump the first time perfectly. Like,
wow.
Just be able to take advice and change it on the go like that. Like, you're really good." And like that first day, that was the first time I've ever gotten kind of that reinforced confidence from other people that I've been lacking for so many years since I got bigger. And it really was the driving force behind me turning my life around.
Man, that's incredible. So the basketball, before you discovered wrestling and before you went, you know, through the depression and being obese, so with the basketball, was that kind of your dream early on? And then when you got to wrestling, that kind of became your thing? Or was basketball just kind of more of like just a hobby? Or
I'm the type of person that if I do anything, I do it like at 110%. I do it all day, every day. And I just become completely obsessed with it until I'm really good at it. That's always been the way it is. And like in high school, that's what basketball was. I mean, I never touched a basketball before I was 13 years old.
Uh-huh.
And the first time I picked it up, I sucked, but I hated being bad at it so much that I'd practice 7 hours a day until I finally got really good at it. And then I blew up my knee and I brought the same into wrestling. Like I never dreamed of being in the NBA. I knew I was 6 feet tall and a bigger kid and I was white and I wasn't that athletic. So, like, the NBA wasn't really a thing. And I was a wrestling fan before that. And I never saw the WWE as a thing because I was always a bigger kid. I never looked like an Adonis, like Chris Masters or whoever was I was seeing on TV that time. And I never thought that was even remotely possible.
Right.
So, like, I never dreamed of being WWE champion. Like, that would have been a massive dream for me to even, like, picture happening. And I feel like it was always really realistic and maybe somewhat pessimistic in my dreams.
Right, right. When you first stepped in that ring for your first match, describe to me how that feels. Because I got to imagine, you know, once you kind of, you know, you go through your training and you're getting ready for it, that's got to be a huge, huge moment.
Well, for me, it was kind of bittersweet. I didn't know I was going to wrestle my first match until about 2 hours before I ended up doing it.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, I started training, it was November 2005, and from the first day on, like, I never missed a class. I went every single day, and about 5 weeks later, I went to a show that my school was running, and somebody had to leave for a different booking, so everyone turned to me and said, "Oh my God, you have to do this, like, you have to do this," and I refused. There was no way I was stepping in that ring, man. I was scared out of my mind. And I kept telling everybody, I'm not ready for this. And everybody just sits me down and it's like, "You're ready. Don't worry. All these guys, they know what they're doing. They'll take care of you, blah, blah, blah." And I went out there and I did it and I got chopped until I bled through my shirt because that's what people thought they had to do to a new vulnerable kid that didn't know any better. And, yeah, like it was bittersweet. Like I loved being able to say I did it. But I didn't feel like I was ready in that moment.
Right.
That's crazy. Hey, Josh, it's Chris. I just wanted to go back to this training thing. I was just curious. Where did you get your training and who trained you?
I originally, that first school I started at in November 2005 was called Living Legends Wrestling Academy. It was a smaller school. It was basically just a ring. And it was run by a bunch of misfits. Whoever wanted to train, trained. And it was just basically an opportunity for everyone to get in a ring. And it wasn't until a year later that I found a more reputable school ran by Johnny Devine, and he retrained me from the ground up, and I'd consider him to be my trainer.
Oh, wow. So it's like whatever you'd learned at that first school, you just had to pretty much just wash it away and just start from scratch?
Yeah, like there were some certain things I learned there that I've never let go of, but he retrained me from the ground up. He was trained in the Heart Dungeon, so they have a very specific way of training and very technical wrestling, so
that's
pretty much what he had to do. Make new foundations, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because I look at what all you and everybody else that wrestles, I don't necessarily compare it to, because I take jiu-jitsu classes regularly, and I feel much better getting thrown onto those soft mats than you guys taking bumps on those in the wrestling ring. So I have to definitely applaud you for that.
Well, my that Johnny Devine's wrestling school was actually ran in a boxing ring. And you know how a boxing ring feels. It's nowhere close to the give of a wrestling ring.
No way.
You take 50 bumps a night in that thing.
Ooh.
So it pretty much weeded out who wanted to be the wrestler real fast.
I would say so. That sounds painful.
Yeah.
How did you get used to those bumps? I mean, after so long, I mean, like we see like on TV, you know, like the tough enough training, and I don't know how true that is. I mean, maybe they, you know, embellish it a little bit, but like they just show people like taking bumps over and over and over and over again. And if that's what you or part of what you had to deal with, how did you get used to just getting slammed on your back constantly? It's going to be tough.
Like now I can take a bump at any point in time, no matter how big, and I don't seem to feel it unless something goes wrong. But when I first started, I remember going home and my heels would be bruised. My tailbone would be swollen and bruised. Like I'd had a sore back, sore shoulder, stuff like that. But I think after time, you just build up a tolerance, you numb the nerves a little bit. And like, it's like anything, the more you do it, the more your body's going to adapt to it. So I think I'm just numb to it now after 10 years.
Wow. I mean, do you recall like how many, let's say maybe months it took or weeks? I mean, you know, was it like a month, 2 months or so before you started just kind of, you know, being able to just take them, you know, no big deal?
It was years.
Years. I would say
years. It wasn't until I finished my training. Because like I stopped training in 2007 and I just strictly wrestled every weekend at that point. And I trained here and there after that. But like every time, if you're training 3 times a week and you're taking that many bumps 3 times a week, you're going to feel it. Like, yeah. You're not going to bump perfectly every time. You're going to hit your tailbone, stuff like that.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I'm looking here. You've been all over the independent scene. You're only 28 years old, man. Chris and I, we're approaching our mid-30s, so you're kind of like a youngin' to us, man.
I don't feel young.
You don't feel young?
What? No, my body feels much older.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I try to figure out, like, how many years taking all these bumps adds onto your life. Yeah, like we hear about like all the old wrestlers that we grew up watching and maybe how they feel now as older people in their late 40s and early 50s. But I got to wonder, you know, okay, so you wrestled for 10 years. Like how many years does that add on to what your body may feel like? You know, does it add an extra 10 years on, an extra 15 years? Like I'm trying to figure that out in my mind. Like how many years that actually adds to you?
I can't remember who said it. It might have been Tommy Dreamer, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Somebody, I remember in a locker room, told me that you have to take your wrestling years and add them like dog years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Whoa.
So, like, 10 years of wrestling is like being 70 years old, apparently.
Jesus.
If you do it full time. I haven't done it full time, mind you.
Right.
But, like, it's pretty close. So maybe not 7 years for every year, maybe 3.
Right.
But, yeah.
And you've wrestled in Canada, you've wrestled in the United States. What's some of the other countries you've wrestled in?
That's it.
That's it.
There was plans to do Europe in the fall of this year, but obviously that has to change now.
Yeah.
There was always dreams of going to Japan. That was always a goal of mine. But just never came to fruition.
I see. And you have like a family, like a wife, a girlfriend, some kids, you know, what's your family situation like?
I have a girlfriend I've been with for 2.5 years and a 6-month-old with her and, growing family. That's my family and, it's great.
No, that's awesome. The reason why I was asking is more or less because, you know, like when you're on the road and you're traveling and how do you adjust, you know, being away from your family? It's one thing I ask nearly every person we get on the show because I'm just so fascinated that, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, the wrestlers say, well, this is my job. So I get that part of it, but I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what is that like? You know, how do you adjust to that when you're on the road, you're away from your family? You know, what is that like for you?
I've had relationships in the past where it just doesn't fly. It doesn't work when someone makes you choose one or the other. I'm lucky with my girl that she's really good about it. She's a wrestling fan. She appreciates what I do. She knows how much I love it. So she was always very supportive. If I had to drive to Chicago for a weekend and be away all weekend, but I worked all week, like we'd just make it work. And that was something she was willing to do. And I was lucky for that.
And she was cool, you know, with all the bump taking and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like she understood my passion for it and that I'd be miserable if I like wouldn't be able to do it. And it's something that we're looking at working on now because I have to step away from it. But, yeah, you just need to have someone that's very supportive of you, most importantly, and what your passions are, right?
Sure. I mean, that's,
oh yeah,
that's when you know you got a keeper.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Chris is off working, you know, full time in the IT world, which sounds really exciting. And then he's doing this jujitsu stuff, and I work in marketing and I do this radio stuff on the side. And it's like, if I didn't have my fiance to be supportive of this, I wouldn't have a leg to, you know, stand on, quite frankly.
Yeah. At the same time, if you had someone that wasn't supportive and was trying to take that away from you and you choose one or the other, then you're just going to be miserable.
Oh, I've been there, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. We all have.
I've been down the aisle, let's say, once before. You live and you learn. You know, I don't have any regrets. I don't look at it as a bad experience, but, you know, you live and you learn, you know?
Oh, we've all been there. I was close myself at one point.
Really?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
How close?
About 4 or 5 months away.
Oh, man. We don't have to go, like, super details, but what happened?
No, it doesn't bother me. I was given an ultimatum of wrestling or her, and I didn't think it was a fair thing to ask me at 24, 25 years old, whatever I was at the time.
Sure, 24. Especially at that age, yeah. I mean, that's
young.
That is young, man.
Yeah, I thought it was very, like, it was something, like, I would never do. I would never give anyone an ultimatum
on what
they love versus something else.
And was she around the same age, or older, younger, or what?
Same age, just didn't understand it, didn't get that I loved it and that it was something that, like, meant so much to me. So, and obviously, I think she got it after we broke up, but...
Yeah. I hear you on that, man. I mean, I've tried to explain, you know, I do this radio thing and we don't make millions of dollars doing it. It's something that we do more as, like, a hobby for fun, and people just happen to listen to it. But it's like trying to explain it to somebody who's like, you know, why do you spend, you know, how many X amount of hours during the week producing for this stupid dumb show that, you know, you're not making hardly any money on. And, you know, it's not necessarily the wrestling thing like you're talking about, but it's similar. I think, you know, trying to explain, you know, how you do all this stuff for, you know, the limited reward, I guess.
It's the exact same thing. I've had countless people come up to me over the years and be like, oh, you do this silly wrestling thing.
Right.
Like it's playtime for me or something. And, like, it's just people that don't get it. And those people I found, for the most part, that criticize it and they have nothing better to do than to criticize it are people that, in fact, have a void in their lives they haven't been able to fill. They haven't found their wrestling or their podcasting. They haven't found their passion so that they have to undermine other people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard that many times.
Yeah, and sometimes they figure it out and sometimes they don't. But there's always going to be those people, and it's just all about being true to yourself, right?
Exactly. I mean, look at you, man. You went on the independent circuit. You wrestled in the United States and Canada. I mean, you did something with it, even though, you know, granted, maybe you didn't hit WrestleMania or something like that. But still, from your standpoint, I could see where you're like, okay, I went and I made something of this. You know, I had a hell of a run, 10 years. I mean, that's a hell of a run.
I'm proud to say that I did way more than I ever thought was possible.
Right. I mean, when you got in it, what kind of expectations did you set for yourself when you got into wrestling?
I never expected to do anything more than the training class I did.
Really? Okay. So you're like, okay, I'm going to go do this class. I'm going to learn some stuff, but I don't really think it's going to go further than this. That's what you thought?
Yeah, it was like, oh, it's something to do for fun. You know, it's good to be there and learn this stuff. I'm pretty good at it from what I've been told, but, like, I never thought it was going to amount to anything. I never thought I'd work a real show. I never thought I'd travel North America.
Yeah.
It just seemed like every single thing that happened, I did the training show, and then I set a new goal to get on a main show, and then I got on a main show, and then I was like, oh, man, I need to do this now and wrestle in this place, and then I went and did that. And every goal I set, I'd achieve, and it just kept building blocks in there and there, and then it got to ROH and PWG, and then from PWG, like, my goals were NXT, Europe, Japan, something like that, and it's just now the train's coming off the tracks before I can achieve those. It wasn't at any fault of mine.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I was going to ask you about, when you came to the States to wrestle, was that your first time coming to America?
I came to America about a year into my wrestling career, far too early.
Right, so that was your first exposure to our country?
Yes, I did a pre-show match for CZW.
Okay.
In November of 2006, and that was against Michael Elgin, who was Unreal Michael Elgin at the time. And it was probably the worst match CZW's ever seen.
Why was that?
I had no business being there. The only reason I was there was because Elgin had got a spot and needed someone to go in the car with him. He knew that I was always willing to travel anywhere and do anything.
Right.
So he called me up and he knew that I was talented enough to have a decent match. But by the time we got there, it's just like when everyone comes up to you and tells you, oh, you just drove 10 hours one way. Don't go anything over 5 minutes.
Oh man.
And then you go out there and you want to make an impression and do everything you can. And you go 10 minutes and the whole crowd is like, Philly's probably the most vicious crowd in all of wrestling. You hear it from everybody.
Yeah.
They sure did. Make me feel that was true. And it was something I never forgot. So when I got back from doing that in November of 2006, I didn't cross back into the States for maybe 3-4 years.
Right.
So I wanted to polish myself in Canada before I went back there. I wanted to be ready so that when I did go down there, I could make an impression.
Sure. So I mean, it's safe to say that Philly's probably your least favorite place to visit.
Oh, it's my favorite place now.
Oh, it
is. I went back there for National Pro Wrestling Day 3 or 4 years ago, and from all accounts from everybody else, we stole the show.
Yeah.
That was kind of my redemption, I guess, for right. that shitty, or sorry, terrible right. CZW match.
So now Philly is your favorite place you've seen?
Oh, it's one of my favorites, yeah.
All right, well, what's your favorite place?
Soft spot in my heart for Reseda in California, for Cleveland, Ohio, and for Chicago, Illinois. Those are my three kind of main places in America that right. have always been good to me.
I've never done Chicago. I will say that. I've been across this country a couple times. My father was in the Navy, and you know, he moved us back and forth across the country. But I Chicago's the one place that's kind of eluded me. I've never been there. What would you recommend to somebody who's never been to Chicago? Something to do, something nice to do.
Man, I've been to Chicago over 60 times in the last 3-4 years.
Wow.
And I've never seen more than a Denny's or a rest stop.
you've not even gone to be a tourist.
No, I drive all day to get there. I wrestle the show. We get there 2 hours before the show, and then we drive all night to get home.
You're in all business. You're in and you're out.
Oh, well, yeah, there's always another booking, or there's always a family event to go to if there isn't.
Sure. I saw something online where Dave Meltzer called you one of the next generation of indie stars. Says you were going to be a big, you know, big star of the next generation. How does that make you feel when you hear a guy like that who's been covering the business for so many years and speaking so highly of you?
Yeah, it felt great. He was there in attendance, front row, right behind me for our debut at PWG, and that's in the article he wrote. That's what he said. It felt great. Yeah, I can't say anything more than that about it, I guess. It's just good to be valued by and validated by people that have seen wrestling for so long.
Do you handle, you know, criticism, both good and bad, well? I mean, how do you process that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I love bad criticism because it's something to work on. I'm not like not tooting my own horn, but I don't get a lot of bad criticism just because I think it's because I'm so genuine with people.
Right.
like some people just rip into people because they want to, like, it's, what is it called? Flaming up on Twitter or something.
Oh yeah. People love the attention trolling on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. And like my tag team partner, Ethan Page, she's a victim of that a lot. People have blown up on him on Twitter just for the sake of entertain themselves, I guess. But it's something I've pretty much avoided for the most part. Anytime I do see something criticism, like any criticism, I'm very open to it.
Sure.
It doesn't bother me. So that, like, nobody's perfect. I'm certainly not perfect. There's certainly ways I can improve. And even though somebody that might not be a wrestler is offering me some criticism, there might be that diamond in the rough of what they say, something that clicks and helps me get better.
Fair enough. And just to follow up to that, speaking about, you know, criticism or crowds, trolling and whatnot, what's your take on crowds in professional wrestling today? I mean, we've seen many instances, you know, recently, like in the WWE, of crowds wanting to kind of hijack the show, make it their own, make it about them. I mean, you got good crowds that are, you know, generally having fun, enjoying what's going on in the ring, and you have other crowds that are kind of, you know, trolling, if you will, or making it about them. What's your general opinion? A guy that's been around and seen a lot of crowds, your opinion of the crowds at wrestling shows today?
That happens a fair bit on the indies. It happens a lot on Raw now, actually, depending on what city they're in.
Yeah.
From my perspective, it's never affected what I do in the ring.
Right.
I usually always stick to my game plan, no matter what the crowd's doing that night. And it usually always works out for me. I think a lot of wrestlers get caught up in it and they play into it. And that's one of the problems of why it persists, especially on the indies.
Right. So it's never like thrown you off though, personally, like you're able to go out there and kind of like tune it out or something like that.
Yeah. The more attention you're going to give them, the more they're going to realize it's working and keep going.
Right.
Unless they're insanely persistent, which usually isn't the case. So it's never something like I feed into.
Right on, right on. Chris.
But it does happen a fair bit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Cause I know I go to the, I went to the Ring of Honor show and I go to a lot of the indie shows more so than Gary. And I'm guilty of doing some of these things that have been talked about. And some of these wrestlers, they don't bat an eye. And I think that's a great testament to their work ethic and being able to control the crowd and not let the crowd control them.
Yeah, like the way I was trained was to, like, in my opinion, if you buy a ticket, you can do whatever you want as long as you're not harming anybody.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I don't care what you do. You can boo me all you want, even if I'm a good guy. Like, that's your opinion, whatever. You paid a ticket to see it. It doesn't bother me. But on the flip side, like, you have to be a pro and realize that it's your job to make that crowd, like, enjoy whatever it is you're supposed to do out there.
Oh, definitely. So, definitely.
Even if they're trolling, you're supposed to give them some entertainment. So no matter what that takes.
Right. I remember one time I heard Bret Hart say, in one of his matches that the crowd was really onto him. He's like, you're not going to control this match. I'm controlling it. And everybody was booing him and he just kept like putting on the rest holds and everything else. It was just insane. He was obviously one of the best at that. And just not letting the crowd control what he does in the ring.
Yeah, and to a lesser part, I see a guy like Adam Cole, who's been pretty successful at doing that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Adam Cole's probably one of the best at it.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears, and I'm looking at the section on your blog here where you did a Ring of Honor trial camp, and I'm looking at your opponent, looking at you and Ethan's opponent here, and it was Red Dragon. And I guess that was your first injury?
Well, I suffered an injury at AEW about a year before that. I took a top rope reverse Rana. And I spiked myself pretty bad, and it caused my back to have a lot of problems. So I took a bunch of, like, 6 months off. And when I finally returned and felt good, it was full speed ahead. I did that camp just so that it could be considered. Ethan Page had already done a camp before that so that we could both be considered for shows, and we got booked versus Red Dragon. And we wrestled Red Dragon for Ring of Honor before, a year before that, and we always worked really well with him. It was an amazing match. It was one of the best moments of my entire career. Just at the end, I took that tornado DDT, and it was just one of those instances where I wasn't in pain, but it felt like adrenaline kicked in. There was something wrong, like something wasn't right with how that happened. So by the time I got home from that show in Dearborn, it was probably 7 hours later, my right arm just started killing me. And it was off to the hospital from there.
so right away you're done with the show, you're starting to feel something, and all of a sudden it just gets worse, and so you're right in the hospital.
Yeah, and it was so bittersweet because that was easily the most over I've ever been on any wrestling show in my life.
Yeah, that's quite a grouping right there for you to work with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. I mean, those guys have put on some of the most amazing matches, and the fact that that's one of your best, that speaks highly for both, you know, all four of you guys.
Yeah, we thought that match was what was going to get us like our contracts, because we went out there with their tag team champions and we hung with them. We stole the show. When we went out, nobody liked us in that crowd. By the end of the match, they were chanting Headgear and Monster Mafia to the point where everything on those TV tapings for the next 3 hours up until Kevin Steen's retirement match at the end, or not retirement, but his farewell match, they hijacked the show and chanted headgear between everything.
Now the headgear, that's always been a part of your wrestling persona?
Only for the last 3 years. I suffered an ear injury in Cleveland for AIW 3 years ago at the JT Lightning Invitational Tournament, and was told I would go deaf if it ever got swollen again, because I'm kind of susceptible to having cauliflower ears.
Oh, wow.
So I used the headgear for the first few months because my ear was far more susceptible to swelling, and to avoid that but not lose bookings, and it kind of just stuck. It's something that got over and gave me something so I can be different.
So now, how long when you went to the hospital? How long now did you have? You had surgery after that, or did you just let it go?
I still wrestled for the next 2 months after the injury happened. Like, the sensation came back in my right arm. I lost about 90% of the strength I had in my right arm, but I still managed to wrestle two more Ring of Honor shows and a bunch of other shows across North America during that time, because tag bookings don't turn into singles bookings if one partner gets hurt. And I didn't want Ring of Honor to slip away after we just stole the show with Red Dragon. I thought we were that close to getting contracts. Like, I really did. And we had some good matches for Ring of Honor even through my injury. I kept it a secret the whole time. And I went in for surgery at the end of September of last year. And had a C4, C5 neck fusion.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, I mean, how are you feeling as of today?
That surgery was a complete success. Ever since then, it took maybe 5 months after surgery before all the strength came back in my right arm. But now my right arm's my good arm, because the injury I suffered at the start of April was to my C5, C6, and that affects my left arm, which is the same injury I had before, but on the other side now.
Right.
And it's just far more severe than the first one was, because the narrowing of where the nerves come out of my spinal cord is so severe that it could be permanent if I don't get surgery.
I see. And I see you've got this match coming up on the 12th of July.
And I have about six or seven before that.
Oh, six or seven before that. This is the first one I've seen here. So you got a couple of more here in the tank before you wrap it up.
Yeah, I have two in Chicago this weekend. Kind of my goodbye to Chicago. I got a bunch in Toronto the week after that. And then I have a big show, Absolution 10, for AIW in Cleveland on July 10th before my retirement show.
Wow. So how do you think you're gonna be able to hold up through all these matches?
Well, I was injured at the start of April, and I've been wrestling through it ever since.
You've been telling all right, anybody.
Yeah, so I'm already hurt. It's not like I'm going to hurt it again. Right. So until I have the surgery, I guess I'm just going to ride it out and try and be careful. And I just want to go out on my own terms.
Hey, man, I respect that, definitely. No question about that. Now, before we wrap it up, Josh, anything that you want to plug in terms of some... you know, specific shows. I know you said Chicago this weekend. I see here you got a store on Pro Wrestling Tees. Anything basically you want to plug, I want to leave the floor to you to make sure that we get everybody to everything that you got going on here.
I'll plug AEW this weekend, Friday evening on Bourbon Street. Look them up at AEWWrestling.com or AAWrestling.com, sorry. AIW on July 10th. It's Absolution 10. It's going to be the biggest show Cleveland's ever seen, independent-wise. And my farewell show for Alpha 1 in Hamilton on July 12th. I would love everybody to come out to that and support. It's kind of my way of getting some income for the next 2 months that I'm going to have to take off work to feed my family while I'm off recovering from neck surgery. So every bit of support helps. I have it's called the Forever T-shirt. It's by Dave Bogart. It just went up on ProWrestlingTees.com/Josh Alexander. It's available now. And that's kind of everything, guys. Just follow me at walking_weapon on Twitter, and I'll fill you in on everything.
Very good. Well, Josh, we appreciate so much you taking time out of your day to speak with us, and we wish you all the best, man. I hope that, you know, these matches go well, and pray for, you know, some safe outcomes there, and that, you know, when you get the surgery, everything pulls through, man. I hope everything turns out well for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And, you know, anytime you want to come back and shoot the breeze, we'd love to have you back on anytime you got something to plug, or you just want to come on and hang out and chat, man. We'd love to have you back.
Perfect. Sounds good, man.
All right, Josh. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. See ya.
See ya.
All right, Josh Alexander, the walking weapon. ProWrestlingTees.com/Josh Alexander at walking_weapon on Twitter. Josh Alexander, everybody. Good find there, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
Way to go, buddy.
Save the day after the first no call.
Yeah, I was getting nervous there. I was like, damn it, he's not going to pick up, and then we're going to have to figure out how to fill an hour on our own, because God forbid, I mean, we're not very good at what we do or anything, so.
No, of course not. Yeah, you got to check out, Josh mentioned the AIW shows. That is some of the craziest wrestling I've ever seen.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just some awesome wrestling, a lot of intergender wrestling, which is wild to me. But it's some of the most legendary indie wrestling that's going around.
Sounds good to me, brother. Well, before we move along, I just want to remind everybody who's listening live, coming up after us, Outside Interference with the Legal Man, Mark Charles and Dan Kowal. They're going to be flipping the switch at 9 p.m. East, and they're going to be talking to former TNA star Jesse Sorensen tonight. You may remember Jesse. He had that big injury in TNA with, Zema Ion.
Yeah, it was like a botched moonsault from the ropes or something, from the top rope. It was crazy. Yeah, I remember that happened.
Yeah, and I thought TNA was going to take care of this guy, and, well, they dropped him, what, how long after he recovered or was in recovery?
Yeah, he wasn't even through his recovery.
I'm hoping the Legal Man is going to ask him a little bit about that, because I'm very curious about how all that went, because he was supposed to be, you know, part of the family and all that stuff in the TNA, because they're big family people, allegedly. Rumor has it.
Right, that's what we heard.
You get injured and then they drop you, you know?
So good, they bail.
Good people. Run. Good people there at TNA, allegedly. Good people.
Yeah, cut and run. There you go, Dixie.
And also, he got a ton of other interviews with some other legends. Let's see here. Let's pull up his Twitter here, at Out Interference.
Last week, man, that interview was with Joe Malenko and Steve Kerr. That was awesome.
SoCal Val.
And SoCal. Oh, yeah. I can't forget SoCal Val.
Whoa there, brother.
Whoa. Gotta slow down.
You're a married man. I'm almost married, man. We got to relax there.
Gentleman and a scholar.
So, no, he's got quite a few people on tonight for the Outside Interference. And before us, you heard the great Mr. Martin, Mr. Sullivan. They recorded their podcast in the middle of a tropical storm. How about that one?
Yeah, that's wild. Crazy.
But anyway, we'll finish up the show here talking about, of course, Money in the Bank, a little bit of Raw, and of course, the great Dusty Rhodes, the legendary Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. That's a terrible impression, but I had to get mine out there. God knows everybody else has thrown out their damn impressions of Dusty Rhodes. We lost a legend, Chris.
We did.
He was before my time. I'm not going to pretend like I, you know everything there is to know about Dusty. Like I know all his matches and all that stuff. First time I seen this guy, he was in the polka dots wrestling for Vince.
Yep,
that's
me too.
The first time I saw the guy.
Yep, because that's how our generation was exposed to Dusty Rhodes for the first time was the polka dots and Sapphire.
Yeah, I mean, look, I had no clue that he had this this rich history of, you know, cutting great promos and, you know, and before WWE and all that. Like, I had no idea any of that stuff existed.
Right, because I, you know, even now I remember his stuff that he did, obviously his great stuff he did with Flair. But even before that, I had no idea he worked with superstar Billy Graham at the Garden.
Yeah, Harley Race, all these guys, man. So we lost the Legendary, but that was Thursday.
It was.
Yeah, we lost the great Dusty Rhodes, a charismatic guy. I don't know how anybody couldn't love this guy. You know, like you hear him immediately, it's just electricity right away.
Oh, it is, and you're just hooked. I mean, you're hooked right in.
Yeah,
and no, nothing negative about him.
No, I mean, you know, you'd have people say, well, you know, back when he was booking, you know, he kind of played it in his favor a lot and kept himself on top for too long. I mean, all that kind of stuff. But you know, hey, I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff.
You hear all the stuff, oh, it was a dusty finish and all that from the booking stuff, but.
Yeah, I don't put a whole lot of stock in that personally. You know, I like to remember the good times of Dusty, and you know the stuff of his that I know and I'm familiar with, and then obviously seeing newer clips as I got older of his past. I mean, just some good stuff, man. Great promos. I mean, this guy was like a big fat dude like me, but like he made that stuff work, man. Like he could still put on a convincing match. You can get it behind a guy like Dusty Rhodes. You can believe in a guy like Dusty Rhodes. There was a promo that Dean Ambrose cut after the Money in the Bank show that they put on their stupid YouTube channel.
Ugh.
That I thought to myself, why the hell didn't they just roll the cameras for an extra minute or two and let this be shown on the pay-per-view? Or why didn't they go on Raw the next day and replay this promo? I mean, it almost seemed like it was for Dusty. I mean, it was Dean in character talking about Seth Rollins, but you could tell, like, he was channeling Dusty through this promo. I thought it was great, man. I don't know why they don't air this stuff on TV. It's the same thing with Daniel Bryan, who, you know, it's like people watch Daniel Bryan on TV and they think, oh, he's this smiling yes man guy. And, you know, he comes out and all he knows how to say is yes, no, yes, no. But, like, they flip the cameras on for the network or for some YouTube exclusive and he cuts these, like, really deep, meaningful, emotional promos, and no one ever sees these things.
That's insane.
It's silly. Like
Because you talk about this thing that was on YouTube. I didn't see it.
Well, I tweeted it. I would thought you would have seen it on my Twitter @PWInformant.
Man, there's so much stuff going on there. I must have missed it.
You're not paying attention. You probably got that damn Hoots movie on every tab of your computer, and you're just not even looking at my Twitter.
Not even close.
Ah, you son of a bitch.
Not even close.
Yeah, okay. Well,
but did you watch the network special? I know I didn't watch. Obviously, I didn't watch it after
the Dusty one.
Yeah,
no, I have not seen that one yet. I watched. Yeah. I had a few minutes. Well, I don't want to say a few minutes. I had roughly an hour, so I watched the Tough Enough thing last night.
Okay, yeah, I watched the celebration. Was it Celebration of a Dream or Celebrating the Dream?
Now, did they just grab his DVD stuff, or is there anything new in there?
I think some of it was just some of his old interviews that he had done and a lot of his career highlights, but there was a lot of new stuff. Like they had just shot it like the day after.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah, there is some new stuff in there.
Triple H, Stephanie, Rick, you know, stuff with Ric Flair, Charlotte. I mean, it's just a lot of different things. It was a tearjerker, an absolute tearjerker towards the end.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very emotional. And of course, they played, you know, the Hall of Fame speech and talked about his matches with Flair and Superstar and all the stuff he did for NXT. And
yeah,
it was amazing stuff. And Triple H, it was about as real as it gets right there.
Yeah, I remember they're watching the pre-show to Money in the Bank and Renee Young. I mean, she was, you know, choking up, damn near crying on TV. I mean, especially these younger people, you know, like the Renee Youngs, even though she's more or less like an announcer, but the wrestlers, announcers, I mean, these are people that went through like the Performance Center, NXT. That's where Dusty worked the last couple of years of his life. So, you know,
these
people have worked with him closely. And so I can imagine they're probably taking it harder as much as the next guy.
Oh, I can imagine, especially a guy like Seth Rollins, too, who's now on top, but looking back, got his big break in NXT under Dusty's tutelage, and Dusty even called them his NXT kids.
Yeah.
They were just like, they were his own kids, and they had everybody had such a bond. And even they got to Kevin Owens talking about how in a short time there, he very thankful for getting to know Dusty Rhodes and working with him.
Oh, so they did have some Kevin Owens in there.
Yeah.
Very good. We'll get to him in a moment. Yeah, speaking of the Performance Center, I saw this Tough Enough special. I don't know if you saw it or not. It's about an hour. And I got to tell you, man, I mean, I know that wrestling's all about larger than life characters and things of this nature. And you get behind these people and you go along for a ride, a compelling story. But the more and more I watch this Tough Enough stuff, the more and more I watch, you know, just anything they put on the network that is geared towards reality or as close to reality as they're going to let it go. Or the E60 special with the, you know, Adam Rose, Ray LaPone. Yeah. Yep. The more and more I see the realism in these people, the more that I want to see this kind of stuff transferred to the main product as opposed to a lot of just the goofy scripted stuff, yep. You know, the goofy word for word, this is what you're going to say. I mean, I looked at these kids on this Tough Enough and you could just tell that, I mean, not everybody, but you could tell a lot of these guys, they just really wanted it. There was like this redheaded girl who, you know, she didn't think she was going to make it. She damn near didn't make it. They said she made it. And then she had a doctor come in and say, we found some like heart condition. You're not making it through. And just the emotion, you know, and these stories, these backstories to how these kids got here and what's going through their mind as they're in the performance center. This stuff is so much more compelling to me than the storylines we're seeing on television. And I'm like, can WWE challenge themselves to kind of, you know, channel some of this realism? Not all of it. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, John Cena is the real John Cena and, you know, Randy Orton's the real Randy Orton and you know, these guys are just who they really are. But I mean, is there a way that they can channel some of this realism and inject it into the product with their characters to make it more compelling, to make it seem a little more authentic and not so much just goofy, gimmicky kind of stuff? Can they do that?
No, I certainly hope so. And going back to that E60 thing, I watched all of it. I even watched it again.
Yeah.
I saw Tyler Breeze and saw the one with, the Adam Rose story was, oh man.
The fact that he's still on TV as Adam freaking Rose is horrendous.
Right. They should be back to Leo Kruger.
Either Leo Kruger or let him be Ray freaking LaPone.
Right, let him be himself. Yeah, he's still from South Africa. Just let him be Ray LaPone. And then the Corey Graves situation, I knew he had concussions, but I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, back to the, you know, Ray LaPone, Adam Rose. I mean, this guy's talking about how I had to work hard and fight for, you know, to feed my family and take care of my kid and all that. I mean, what's more real than that?
Right, and the fact that he didn't know if he was still going to be there. They were at a crossroads with the whole Leo Kruger character.
Yeah, I mean,
he didn't know and he's 35 years old, so he's not exactly 20, you know, 27, 28 years old.
I look at look at Monday, for instance. Brock Lesnar was suspended months ago.
Yeah,
for destroying, you know, a cameraman. Destroying Michael Cole. Yep. And not only is he reinstated, which JBL just threw that very quickly in the commentary. The reinstated Brock Lesnar.
And it was so quick. You had really be listening.
Right. Not only is he reinstated, but the guy is rewarded with a title match.
Right. He's an automatic number one contender.
Now let's pause for a second. Do I want to see Brock in the title picture as a number one contender? Well, hell yeah. Next to a guy like Kevin Owens, Brock Lesnar is one of the other most compelling guys there, period. Okay. But when you take in the storyline to account, this guy is suspended and then he comes back and he's reinstated as the number one contender. I mean, something is amiss there. If something really is wrong with that picture, Stephanie McMahon or Triple H should be doing some sort of a promo somewhere explaining how in the hell they suspend a guy and he is all of a sudden back as the number one contender. I have a big problem with that. So it's just like when Stephanie came out at the end of Raw on Monday and the first thing before they got to the Seth Rollins thing, she said she wanted to apologize for the actions of Kevin Owens for what he did to Machine Gun Kelly in that action will be taken against Kevin Owens. It's like, well, bull crap. Yeah. What are you going to do? You're going to suspend him. You're going to fine him. And then you're going to bring him back and he's going to get rewarded with what? It's just like, you can't take it seriously because they took away Lesnar and they brought him back and gave him a title match. I just have a problem with that. I take a great issue to that.
Right. There's such a disconnect. And then, of course, they're all buddies with Paul Heyman shaking his hand. Like, hey, thank you for this opportunity. Best for business. Yada, yada, yada.
Exactly.
And the fact that Kevin, obviously, you know, I know we're probably going to get to it, but Kevin Owens challenging Cena for the U.S. title at Battleground.
Yeah.
So, and yet they're talking about suspending him for or taking action for what he did to Machine Gun Kelly.
Exactly.
So silly.
The whole thing just does not make a whole lot of sense to me, really. It just does not.
There's no logical flow.
Now, on the other hand, I'm extremely thrilled and intrigued to see what they're going to do with Lesnar and Rollins. I mean, Battleground is going to come up in 5 weeks, they said. And I kind of like how they just threw it out there. In 5 weeks, like, why do you even need to say that? It's like, oh, gee, 5 weeks of stalling, right. You know, till we get to the week number three or number four, and then we're going to start actually promoting the show.
Right. You're going to get the authority for 35 episodes or whatever it is. You're going to get the authority for 5 weeks, maybe a little too much Kane, and then you'll get to Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins.
Exactly.
It seems like that's how it always is.
So you got Battleground, you got Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins for the title. Seth Rollins, man, he just looked so,
oh my God,
so fearful.
He looked like he pissed his pants. That's how scared he looked.
Quite the contrast to how he started out the show on Monday.
Or even just when he was talking to Triple H like 5 seconds before.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's like as soon as the music hit, his face just dropped.
Exactly.
Oh, it was brilliant.
Speaking of the music, real quick, we have a hard out for outside interference. So what we're going to do is we're going to hit the outro music, and Chris and I are going to keep the record button going, and we're going to finish up our thoughts with Raw and Money in the Bank. So podcasters, stay right where you're at. We're going to hit this music real quick. We're going to clear the air for outside interference to take the stream, and then they can get on, and Chris and I will continue to talk here and finish out our thoughts about Raw quickly, about Money in the Bank. We have a couple listener questions, and then we're going to actually wrap the show up. So on the other side of the music, stay tuned, podcast people. Do not tune out. We're not actually done yet, but we're just done on the live aspect here to clear the way for outside interference. Chris, listeners, stand by. We're going to be right back. And there we go. We're back. We're clear from the live stream. Chris and I back here on the other side, Wrestling Informant Radio, WrestlingInformant.com. And so, Chris, we were talking about Raw. We're talking about Seth Rollins.
Yep.
How he started out the show so cocky. He wanted to thank himself over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, he even had a list
of his name repeated several times.
Yep. Yeah, I put the joke out on Twitter. It was like equated it to Jericho's list of 1,004 holds, and they say people saying Seth Rollins, armbar, Seth Rollins, armbar. I mean, it was just some funny stuff. He was on top of the world.
I know, it's unbelievable. So, but I thought Seth was so good at the end of the show, because once you heard Brock's music, the demeanor just changed like that.
Oh, it was instant, absolutely instant.
And then when Brock gets in the ring, and they're face to face, and you can just see this look in his eyes, and in Seth Rollins' eyes. I'm just like,
right,
oh my God.
Right, because he's not even making eye contact, and he's slowly starting to back away, and then Lesnar is just creeping back towards him.
I know, man. It was so well done. So I mean, we saw the Royal Rumble, Rollins, Cena, and Lesnar in the triple threat.
Yeah.
I think that when we get these two one-on-one, I mean, it's going to be pretty good, because you got the smaller guy in Rollins. You know, he can create some movement for Lesnar. And they can make a compelling, you know, kind of deal here. So I'm excited to see what they do with this.
Oh, they could definitely tell a story. And that was quite the that last segment was quite the contrast for most of the show.
Yeah, most of the show we're not even going to discuss, because it was a show. It was every Monday Night Raw ever that just drags on and on and on.
Oh, I don't want to say it stunk, but yeah, it stunk. Most of it stunk.
I'm
with the exception of Kevin Owens.
We'll talk about that momentarily. Yes, I'm not going to be one of these kind of people that's going to BS my listeners and say, oh, yeah, I watch Raw from start to finish every week. I watch the Hulu, the 90-minute from start to finish every week. But there's no way in hell. I mean, to sit down and watch a full 3 hours of Raw, it's just, I don't even know how I could go back to it. Even if I had cable again, I don't know how I could go back to it.
Oh, I couldn't watch it. I think I even, I might have even dozed off through some of it. I was like, ugh.
But let's talk about the Kevin Owens, because, you know, he had this match with John Cena. He lost on Money in the Bank. But he got his heat back as he powerbombed John Cena on the apron. John Cena was not at the show to sell the injury. He was off the show to sell the injury. I like that.
That was smart.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice. So basically, you know, Kevin Owens is out there cutting a promo. He throws up his own open challenge. Dolph Ziggler answers. And the genius of this is that Dolph Ziggler thinks that he's going to get a title match.
Right. Even Lillian sold it.
Yeah. And Kevin Owens like, whoa, hold on.
Nope.
I'm like, wow, that was great.
That was absolutely brilliant.
And Kevin Owens just destroyed Dolph Ziggler. I loved it.
Right. So one time we're not going to complain about Ziggler getting just completely get the crap kicked out of him.
Well, some people will. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. But I'd say for the most part, everybody was also focused on Kevin Owens.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. I really don't know what the hell is going on with Dolph Ziggler. This like hair bands, this jacket that he's wearing. This Hollywood heel or something it says on the back. Like, what the hell is that?
I don't know. He's still doing the headband thing too, and I just don't get it.
I mean, you know, he's getting less and less, I would say, less like Billy Gunn to a certain degree, because he had that look for a while. He still kind of has a look, but he's getting away from it a little bit, and he's got this jacket. I don't even know what the hell this guy's doing. Like, what is he doing?
It's so confusing. This 1980s look all over again.
And he's got this hot piece, Lana. If this was the Attitude Era, they probably would be having their own live sex celebration in the ring, probably.
Right, that would have been a perfect fit.
Yeah, they just kiss on the lip, just a little kiss there, so.
Yeah, and she's not even accompanying him down to ringside either.
No, I noticed that. She, like, stands up on the stage and he goes down to the ring. That's interesting.
And then she, like, goes away.
Maybe she just knew that Kevin Owens was going to destroy him, and that was going to be the end of it.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, good luck walking into the fire. There you go, Kevin.
And Kevin Owens powerbombing Machine Gun Kelly off the stage.
Oh, my gosh.
But Machine Gun Kelly asked for it, man. He shoved Kevin Owens first. This is all Machine Gun's fault. Really, Kevin Owens should not be held responsible for this.
No, he came out there and talked to him and showed his, hey, that's on you. You shoved Kevin Owens, that's on you.
That's on you, cuh. Say it. that's on you, Ka. You did that, buddy. So no, it was this Money in the Bank show. I mean, we just briefly, I mean, you know, we can briefly kind of talk about the high spots of it, but I mean, really it was a three match kind of show. You had the Money in the Bank. Sheamus is the Money in the Bank winner. It's just kind of bleh.
We were way off. We were so far off.
I thought for sure it was going to be Roman Reigns. I thought for sure that's what made sense to me, but I guess it didn't make sense to others.
Yeah, that made absolutely the most sense. But yet now he's going to do an angle with Bray Wyatt.
Now that I like. I do like that. Did I not say on this show like months ago they should take Bray Wyatt and feud him with Roman Reigns? That'll be something different.
Yeah, it would be something different.
Don't even lie. I know I said that somewhere. Somebody.
I know you said it. I know you said it at some point in time.
So I'm excited to see what they do with this. I mean, this could be good. But yeah, Sheamus winning the Money in the Bank. Now, look, I'm not here to dog out Sheamus and trash the guy. This is a guy who's been with WWE for, what, 5 years now? 6 years?
Oh, at least.
You know, he's a loyal guy. He's not one of these guys you're hearing about that's all drugged up, drunk, you know. Beating up people or whatever. You know,
he's another guy that's a company guy.
He was Triple H's workout buddy for a while. But that has nothing to do with it. But I mean,
oh no.
This is a guy who, you know, who's kind of, you know, been, like you said, like a company guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, because certainly he does. But I just, at the same time, I I couldn't help but feel overwhelmed with him winning, or underwhelmed, excuse me.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but feel underwhelmed. So, yeah. It was just an underwhelming feeling. It's like, oh, it's Sheamus.
Right. Because then you're looking down the road. It's like, okay, you got Sheamus with the briefcase, and then you have Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Just think about that for a minute. You have Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, and they're Sheamus with the briefcase.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying it was underwhelming.
No. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, it might make sense to WWE. You never know.
Hey, that's why they do what they do, and we do what we do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why they make all the decisions.
Right.
So, who the hell are we to judge? But yeah, this is like a three match show. You had the Money in the Bank ladder match, Owens and Cena, which I thought was better than the original. I'm just gonna say that right now.
And great.
Yeah, and then you had the main event, which is also great. So, I mean, these three matches delivered. The rest of the show, I can't say much for that. You had this, DQ with the Ryback and the Big Show with Miz running. I was like, what the hell is this?
Your favorite match. Don't lie.
Shut up, Chris. and then you had this finish in this Paige and Nikki Bella match where Brie Bella comes out from under the ring and says, I'm not Nikki. And they, cause they give Paige the win. She pins Brie. And then Brie says, I'm not Nikki. And the referee somehow just lets the match keep going.
After he had rung the bell and counted three.
Okay, but even if you say, okay, restart the match, wouldn't she just be disqualified? Because, hey, that clearly wasn't Nikki.
Right, that's interference.
I would think so.
You would think.
But no, apparently they don't think so. All right, let's wrap this thing up. We've got a couple of questions. And we'll start off with the Rocky Top Wrestling RTW reviews. The Stardust survive the death of Dusty? That's an interesting question. A lot of people wondering, when Cody comes back, should he be Stardust? Should he go back to being Cody Rhodes? That's a tough one. I mean, I don't know Dusty personally. I don't know how he, what his take is on his son's character and, would Dusty want him to continue the character he's on that he believes in, or should he go back to being, dashing Cody Rhodes or what have you? So I'm not going to speculate on what Dusty might have thought he wanted his son to be. But for me personally, I mean, if they believe that Stardust is the best way for Cody to continue to be, then by all means, continue it. But they've made such a big thing out of Dusty's death, and as they should, they celebrated his life on television. Mm-hmm. Maybe kind of going back into my thing earlier about realism, maybe you got to bring some of that realism back. Maybe Cody's got to come back without the makeup off, with the makeup off. Maybe even Dustin's got to come back with the makeup off, and they gotta talk a little bit. They gotta figure some things out, and maybe you figure out where they're gonna go from here. I don't know, but It's not my call, but personally, I mean, if you said, Gary, flat out, what would you do? I mean, if you think Stardust is the best way to go, then go for that. But I might even give the whole thing a shot about Cody just being Cody and not Stardust. What
right,
do you think?
And I think so, because I remember when Eddie Guerrero died and Chavo was doing that stupid golfer character. Pretending to be like the preppy golfer Kerwin White.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
That just ended. He went back to being Chavo Guerrero.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true.
And then also Stardust, or Cody, he actually posted on his Twitter his eulogy.
Oh,
that he gave. Yeah. He posted about a half hour ago.
What so
to,
what
to his Twitter. Yeah, to his Twitter. He put both pages of the eulogy out there for everybody to read.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
All right, we got two more here real quick, and then we'll wrap things up. Henry wants to know, when is Charlotte going to come up to the main roster? Hashtag save the divas. God damn it, somebody's going to come up to this roster and help Paige out. Clearly, she can't get help with anybody right now.
Anybody.
She needs something going on, man.
Yeah, anybody. I don't care who it is at this point.
Help this broad out.
Help Paige. Give Paige some help.
Yeah. help hashtag help Paige.
Right, because apparently all the other divas are just bailing on her.
Yeah, no kidding.
He needs some help. Even Emma bailed on her.
Yeah, no kidding, man. They got to figure this whole thing out. So I don't know. I mean, I would bring her up. I think she's fantastic, but it's not my call. I don't know when they're thinking about doing that.
Don't know.
And finally, we've got something here from Dave, who wants to know, isn't Batista still signed to a contract? If so, any news on when he will be featured again? Last I heard, he does not have a contract. Last I heard, he is not under contract with the WWE. So there you go. As far as when he's going to be featured again or brought back, I don't think that he's going to be back anytime soon. Look, the guy's about to be in James freaking Bond's movie. I don't think he's worried about the WWE right now.
Oh, wait, he's got that in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, getting that going. So, yeah, he's set. he doesn't need it.
He's a busy guy.
Yep.
I mean, you know, would I like to see him back? Sure, just not anywhere near a Royal Rumble where people think Daniel Bryan's going to win. So
nowhere near a title opportunity. Nope. Yeah.
I think he can fit in many other roles. You just don't want to bring him back there because then you're going to piss a whole lot of people off. All right. With that being said, that wraps it up for some of our couple of our listener questions. Just wanted to take a few of them just so we can get some in. We do appreciate you guys sending them, and you can send them in anytime. You don't have to just wait for us to tweet it. You can send your questions in anytime you like. You can tweet us at PW Informant or send them privately, info@wrestlinginformant.com. Well, Chris, anything you got, your Twitter or whatever you want to plug, and we're going to wrap this son of a gun up here.
Yeah, before I do that, this Friday, pay-per-view, traditional pay-per-view, Ring of Honor, Best in the World 2015, starts at 8 p.m. Eastern. I've already ordered it. I will be watching. It'll be a lot of fun. I suggest you do the same.
You'll have a report next week.
I sure will. We're going to have a new Ring of Honor World Champion and also a new Ring of Honor Television Champion.
Fantastic. I'm at PW Informant on the Twitter. That's at Chris McManamy. And follow us, tweet us, talk to us about wrestling. I'm off to the beach. I'll see you guys next week. All right. And and we are out. Where's my music? Oh, wait. The music didn't hit.
Oh, no.
Here we go.